Well, it's that time again, and the doctor is in. Yeah, it's Dr. Bill, the computer curmudgeon. And a big hello out there to all of you listening via MP3 or whatever format you may have dubbed it to. But it goes out as an MP3, so I assume you are listening to MP3. Anyway, here it is, June the 3rd. We're into a new month. It's June. Everybody should be out swimming, having a big time, enjoying the summer months. I certainly have been. Hope you have as well. Now, let's talk about I tell you what, I'm getting just a tad ahead of myself. First of all, let me mention that this is Dr. Bill the Computer Curmudgeon, podcast number 39. 39 continuous weeks of podcasting. And we're coming up in just a week or so on the one-year anniversary of the blog, Dr. Bill the Computer Curmudgeon, which, of course, is available at thecomputercurmudgeon.com, thecomputercurmudgeon.com. Now, for those of you that go, you can always go to drbillbailey.net/blog. That's drbillbaily.net/blog. And that will take you to thecomputercurmudgeon.com automatically. So I would encourage you to do that if you just have a problem with the word curmudgeon. See, we just accommodate everybody. Anyway, here's the thing. This week we have quite a few news items to talk about, and that's because several things caught my eye this week, and when they do, I put them in the blog. Some weeks it's very tough. Sometimes I have to really search and search and search just to find something to talk about, but not this week. This week, actually, things happened. First of all, there was an article in eWeek that I thought was really interesting. It was an article comparing the upcoming Microsoft Vista version of Windows, the new version that everybody's excited about, with OpenSUSE 10.1. Now, I found that very interesting because eWeek historically has been a very conservative, business-oriented computer weekly news magazine. And it's just kind of strange that they are talking about comparing Vista with a version of Linux. You know, it's not so much that I think it's all of that likely that people will really be sitting out there scratching their head and going, do I buy Vista or do I buy, or not buy, download OpenSUSE? You know, because OpenSUSE being Linux is free. You can just download it and use it. But, you know, I have no illusions. There's just not that much market penetration when it comes to a version of Linux. However, for a magazine like eWeek to have an article that actually compares the features between the two, I was very impressed. So that, to me, was worthy of a notation in the blog. So there you go. Check it out. There's a link. You can go to it and read the article. And I believe I'm going to check to be sure. Yes, it's by Stephen J. Vaughn Nichols, who bills himself as the computer cynic. He has a little podcast. As a matter of fact, it's kind of interesting about his podcast. You know, I get kind of bent out of shape because of all the tiny little noises that occur as I record my podcast. You know, there's an air conditioner running and all this. And that's all fine. You know, I got to stay cool while I'm doing the program. However, his program, his podcast, when you listen to it, you know, he's always constantly fiddling with his microphone. He's got all these noises like this going on all the time. And it just drives me nutty. But doesn't seem to bother him. Anyway, check out his podcast. Go to eWeek and download the computer or cyber. I think he maybe calls it Cyber Cynic. Yeah, that sounds more like it. Anyway, so he is kind of a Linuxy guy, and he did a comparison between Vista and SUSE, OpenSUSE version 10.1. So check it out. All right, next item, Internet 2. Have you heard about Internet 2? It's been around actually for a little while. Here's the thing, a little bit of history here. If you go back to how the Internet, now I'm not talking about the World Wide Web. World Wide Web was created by Tim Berners-Lee in 1992 as essentially a project for his master's thesis And, you know, he has even been knighted since then, Sir Tim Berners-Lee, for that particular invention. But the internet goes back to the 60s and was created by DARPA, which is the Defense Department's research arm. DARPA basically created it as a means of communication, broad communication between computers, essentially for Defense Department research. However, in order to, you know, tie in all the different people that were involved in the research, they started connecting college campuses. And so it pretty much just became research institutions and college campuses that were connected together in the 60s, and that was the original internet. Over time, it grew and grew and grew and developed and has become the internet that we're familiar with today. Now, these research institutions and colleges a few years ago got together and said, you know, the internet now is passé. We want to develop Internet 2, Internet version 2, which will be more faster and more reliable and all these kinds of things. So they started developing it. And Internet 2, in its current state, now check this out, is 10 gigabit throughput. Dude, I mean, most people at home connected to the internet, you know, and I'm not talking about dial-up. Forget dial-up. I mean, come on. You know, we are in the 21st century now. Just forget dial-up altogether. But even broadband, even Time Warner, you know, Roadrunner, or DSL from the phone company, or whatever you've got, most people still don't get 1 megabit throughput. Most people are getting like 768K. Now, granted, that's fast compared to the old days of dial-up, okay? 1 megabit, all right? Now, think with me that 1 megabit times 1,000 would be 1 gigabit. Now, let your brain get a hold of this. The fastest internet connection you currently have would be 1 megabit. Take that connection and increase its speed by 1,000 times, and you'll have 1 gigabit. Internet 2 is currently 10 gigabits. Oh, dude. That is just so cool. However, that's not the news. That's not the news item. No, no. It's getting giga faster because they are upgrading it to 800 gigabits. The mind completely boggles. Now, let's kind of think about that just a moment. You know, if you were to download a full-length movie. Not that you would, okay? Not that you would. But if you were to download a full-length movie, it would be 700... Let's see. Let me think about this. 700 megabit. Just under 1 gigabit. Or one gig of space, I believe. That sounds right, yes. So basically 3/4 of 1 gig of space, you could get a movie. All right. Now, at 800 gigabits per second, okay, the brain is dealing here. We're talking like less than a second, if my brain is working halfway decent on the math here, to download an entire movie. Pretty much what it means is you could watch the movie in real time as it's downloading, and you would have already gotten the movie in the first few seconds of watching it to your PC. I mean, the brain just completely boggles over the speed of this. It just is amazing. But this is the upgrade they're talking about. Now, why are they doing this? Well, it's obviously being done with fiber optics. It's being done because they won't uncompress. See, most video that you watch over the web is highly, highly, highly compressed. They want uncompressed, high-definition video and video conferencing. And that's why they're doing this incredible speed. Now, what's cool is, in the 60s, when the first version of the Internet came out, many, 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 many years later, now we're using it and don't think anything about it. Internet 2 isn't available to the public yet, but one day we'll have that kind of speed. Now, what does that mean? That means no more TV. Because there won't be any need to broadcast TV. You just hook your TV up to the Internet and everything's there. No need for telephones, hook them up to the Internet. Matter of fact, that's what I already do. My telephone at home is a voice over IP telephone. So I don't have, you know, Bell South does not have a wire running to my apartment. I connect through the Internet and I'm done. And that's the way we're headed. Everything will connect through the Internet. Now, I had an interesting experience recently where some lightning hit some kind of little, you know, transformer thing down the road a ways from the apartment, and there was a large boom, and I thought, ooh, what's happening? And the next thing I know, I had no cable TV, I had no telephone, and I had no Internet connection. Why? Because all of it comes through Time Warner, and I have the whole bundle, you know, that you see advertised for $119. You can get your TV cable, your high-speed Internet, and your telephone all through Time Warner. Well, that's all well and good, but if a lightning bolt takes out their little station, then you lose it all at the same time. Now, to their credit, within 2 hours, it was all back up. I gave them a call and said, hey, dudes, it's not working. And they said, oh, yeah, we know. Lightning hit the little station down the road, and we've got some guys rerouting it. You know, your Internet speed won't be quite as fast until we get it fully repaired, but it'll be back. Within 2 hours, it was back. That's pretty good, you know. I mean, it could be that if lightning had hit the telephone line and taken it out, they'd have had to come out and repair it. So, you know, I'm cool with that. But still, that's where we're headed, is one connection for all of those kinds of things. So eventually TV, everything coming in your home is going to come in through a digital connection. So I just thought that was awesome. 800 gigabit. And it, those of you, you know, math purists out there that, you know, or want to disagree with everything I just said about how the math works out, that's okay. Math and I don't see eye to eye anyway. I mean, the thing about math is 2 plus 2 usually equals 4. I've seen that work pretty much all the time. You have, you know, two fingers and two other fingers, and by the time you get through, you have four fingers. I've seen that work fairly consistently. If you get much beyond that, then the hyperspace cosmic twists of subspace interference works with the mathematics, and things get a little weirder. So you have to watch out for those kinds of things. So just understand that math is virtual with me. Okay? All right. Next item, Microsoft officially launches its Live OneCare service. Now, this is a watershed event to me in the computer world because Microsoft is the most notoriously unsecure operating system on the planet, and yet they have billions and billions of dollars and supposedly the smartest programmers alive, all working on Microsoft products. Bill Gates said many, many years ago that security was number one. And, of course, it hasn't worked out for them. They've had so many problems with security. So what do? They said, okay, guys, we promised you a secure operating system. We promised you we were going to get tight on security. We promised you we were going to fix it. And we couldn't do it. But if you'll pay us more money. Now, these are the people that already have billions and billions and trillions of dollars. They want more money. And so if you'll pay us more money, we'll make your system secure. And that's what Live OneCare is all about. Basically, you pay them $49.95 a year, and you can secure 3 PCs from viruses, spyware, intrusion, yada, yada, yada. Right. Come on, guys. There are already so many free products out there that does exactly what OneCare claims to do, and yet they want to charge you more money. Now, if they wanted to take this security that they have developed for their $49.95 per year and bundle it into the real software as some kind of free service pack, then I would give them props, okay? But to come around and take their problems of an insecure operating system and charge me to fix their problem, sorry, they get a diss, not a prop. Okay, there you go. All right, next item. What is your level of HTML knowledge? Now, here's the interesting thing about this post. When I first posted it, it was because I found this article that talked about the different levels of HTML knowledge. But then I found another article that said that throughout the United States, now keep in mind that there's about 300 million people in the United States, all right? 300 million total population. In the United States, 50 million people have posted actual content to the web. Now that's pretty cool. Out of 300 million, 50 million. Now see, and we're not talking about the number that have used the web, okay? That's way higher. These are people that are authoring things for the web, that have generated web pages in one form or another. 50 million people. That's pretty cool. Okay? Now, in order to do that, you've got to have some way of posting it. Now, maybe they used, you know, they're probably counting people that are using, you know, forums that they just type something in and hit a button and it posts it. You know, if they're counting that, fine. Okay, I understand. But most web pages are written in HTML, hypertext markup language. You have to know and understand that code to a certain extent. So we get into what are the various levels of HTML knowledge. Now, this is just a blog entry that a guy wrote, and it's not official, okay? It's really kind of a little tongue-in-cheek, actually. So, you know, understand that right off. But he's got, basically, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 levels, okay? Starting with level 0. Good computer guy starts with 0. Got to give him some credit for that. All right. HTML level 0 are people who have never seen HTML, except by mistake. Like when they're accidentally opening an HTML email in text mode. These people do not work in the web industry and never will. They have no wish or reason to move beyond level 0. They basically say things like, HTM what? Okay, that's level 0. I can understand that. All right, HTML level 1. These people use the web enough to know that there's some kind of computer programming magic going on behind the scenes of the websites they use. When trying to publish anything on the web, they're helpless without a WYSIWYG, which of course, you know, is what you see is what you get, editor of some kind. It could be Dreamweaver front page, an editor built into the CMS they've been told to use, whatever. People keeping a website's content up to date can often be found at this skill level. And some argue that there should be no need for them to move to a higher level. Okay? Many web project managers, unfortunately, fail to progress beyond level 1. A typical quote of level 1 people is, HTML? It's those tags you use to make bolder italic text. Okay? So they understand greater than, or actually less than, B greater than, before a word, followed by less than slash B greater than, will make that text bold. Okay? There to level 1. You with me? All right, level 2. Here we go. The level at level 2 contains people who know enough about HTML to be able to find their way around an HTML document. As long as they stick to the few tags, everything's called a tag when they're at level 2, at this level, that they recognize. They really don't want to touch the HTML, though. They can understand it to a certain extent. They just don't want to play with it. Many level 2 people are back-end programmers who prefer the safety of Visual Studio or whatever IDE they're using. They think HTML is too simple for them to bother with, and that applications should be smart enough to handle it all for them. Level 2 developers are very popular with CMS vendors. A typical quote at HTML level 2 is, The controls I drag and drop in my IDE work fine in Internet Explorer, so why should I have to even look at the HTML? Okay? So they're fairly savvy about computers and computer programming in general. They just don't want to bother with HTML. It's beneath them, as far as they're concerned. Uh-huh. All right, HTML level 3. A lot of old-school web developers who have been in the business since the late 90s. Hello. Sounds like me. Can be found at this level. Up until the end of the last century, these people coded HTML by hand, so they know all about nested tables and spacer GIFs. Yeah, sounds like me. Since then, WYSIWYG editors like GoLive and Dreamweaver have improved to the point that these level 3 people seem to have no reason to learn more about HTML. These days, most of their HTML-related work is done in their editor's design view anyway, so they'd rather just spend their time learning a specific application instead of finding out more about what's going on behind the scenes. Typical quote is, yeah, I've heard about those new fancy UL and HL tags, but I'm doing just fine with my trusty old table image and BR tags. Okay? Level 3, getting a little more sophisticated, have been in the industry for a long time. All right, level 4, we're progressing. Level 4, this level is where most people start intentionally using doc types. The first step is always to look at a transitional, is to always use a transitional doc type, so XHTML1.0 transitional is most often used. XTML is more recent than HTML after all, so it's got to be better, right? People at this level are also the biggest fans of XHTML 1.1, since they think a higher version number has got to be better. Okay. After hearing from someone that you shouldn't use tables for layout, a lot of level 4 people use diff elements to create a table-like structure. This, of course, leads to a tag suit being replaced by div mania and lots of presentational markup. Class-itis and inline CSS are produced by people at this level. Most web developers who reach level 4 are willing to keep learning, and they understand that there are advantages to the methods being promoted by web standards-oriented blogs and books, but they haven't yet grasped why those methods are better. A typical quote of a level 4 is, how can I create a data table with divs and spans instead of tables? Okay? Are we losing some folks out there? All right. HTML level 5. Most standards-aware web professionals can be found here. These people tend to think about structure and semantics first and presentation later. Strict doc types are generally used at this level to encourage the separation of semantic and presentational markup. Whether the markup language is HTML 4.01 or XHTML 1.0 is less important to many. In fact, these people at level 5 are questioning the use of XHTML. Level 5 people tend to get into endless discussions about tiny markup details. They can waste hours thinking about class names or reorganizing their HTML and CSS files to make their code look pretty. If you've reached this level, I think you're doing extremely well. For most people, there's no compelling reason to move beyond level 5. Typical quote for HTML level 5 is, I wonder which type of list is the most semantic way to mark up this part of my document. Okay, I think probably this is where I would be, is level 5, all right? However, as usual, there's always a level beyond, and that's level 6. Level 6 are the people who are the thinkers of the web industry. They spend a lot of time contemplating what will be useful in the future instead of right here and now. The results of their work will probably not be any practical use to the average web professional for at least another 5 years. These people are out there so far. Oh my. Level 6, they have moved beyond actually building websites for a living. Instead, they are concentrating on writing future specifications or interpreting existing ones for browser vendors. A typical quote of a level 6 is, I think the HTML 4.01 and XHTML 2 specs are too semantically limited, so I'm working on a new markup language. Right. Okay. I really don't have any interest in getting to level 6, you know. I'm not going to write a new markup language to replace HTML, all right? No. So, I think probably, level 5, good enough, okay. And maybe even level 4. Okay, that's fine. But anyway, that's how you can understand and know your level of HTML. And if there's 50 million people out there, then dude, you know, you fit into these categories somewhere if you're one of those 50 million. Wow. All right. Next item, there is an OpenOffice Star Office virus. Interesting little story here. The virus isn't out in the wild. It's not like you're actually going to get it, okay? It's conceptual. And actually, OpenOffice has released a press release that says, actually, it's not a virus because it's just the use of internal macros. Anybody can write a macro. Well, yeah, guys, but if you can write a macro that can do damage, then you need to put in some safeguards to protect us, us in quotes, from ourselves when it comes to using OpenOffice. So you can't say that it's not really a security threat just by saying, well, it's just a macro, you know. Okay. I mean, if Microsoft could have gotten away with that, believe me, they would have gotten away with it because there are thousands and thousands of Microsoft Office macro exploits. Okay. So, this is the first official OpenOffice virus. Now, see, that says to me that after all this time, with Microsoft Office and Microsoft products having thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of security exploits, and here OpenOffice has been out for all this time, and it's just now getting its very first one, what does that say about the security level? Now, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, yes, Dr. Bill. However, it's market penetration. Microsoft Office has much more market penetration, therefore the virus writers want to write to that platform, and that's why there are so many viruses for Microsoft Office. Okay, let's accept that premise. If we accept that premise, then it means that OpenOffice is gaining market share because people are finally writing viruses for it. Gotcha! Okay. Cool. Okay. But I just thought it was interesting, so I put it in the blog. Next item, and actually last item for this week, is a notebook for the geek who has everything. Now, this notebook is so awesome. Okay, I just recently got a new notebook computer from Hewlett-Packard. It's a 5000 series, and it totally rocks. It's what I'm using right now to record the podcast. I really, really like my new notebook. And, you know, it costs a little bit of money, you know, let's say in the neighborhood of $1,100, okay? However, this notebook computer from Dell has a 20-inch screen. Most people's TVs probably aren't 20, well, they probably are a little more than 20 inches, but still, a 20-inch screen. And it weighs 20 pounds. This is more like a luggable than a notebook. But dude, this computer rocks. It is the Dell M2010. It has two, count them, two Intel Core Duo processors. Actually, I guess it's one Intel Core Duo processor, which is two processors, because that's what it is, Core Duo. All the way up to a T2600, which is a 2.6 gigahertz dual-core CPU. The minimum RAM, understand, minimum RAM available is 1 gigabyte. You can get it up to 4 gigabytes. It has an ATI Mobility Radeon X1800 graphics board, which I think has 256 meg of video memory. And it will last about 3 hours on a single charge. 3 hours. Because this thing is sucking the power, man. I'm telling you. Prices will start at $3,500. But, dude, this is one monster computer. With a 20-inch screen alone, you know how big this thing's got to be. It has Bluetooth keyboard and mouse. It has DVD burner, it just goes on and on and on. I mean, the features and the craziness of this thing is amazing. But, dude, for the geek, it has everything. This is the, quote, notebook. And I put it in quotes because 20 pounds and a 20-inch screen, give me a break. But talk about awesome. You walk in the room with that and set it up, and people will go, dude. So, man, gotta love that. I just checked the time and I'm running way out of time. Let me do something right quick while I'm reorganizing myself. We'll just play a little promo.
This podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. TechPodcasts.com. If it's tech, it's here.
Yes, indeed. We're a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Wanted to let you know that. And, of course, quickly get into my geek culture of the week. I always like to have something to leave you with. And we're running over time, so I'm going to have to do this very quickly. But, very quickly, here's what it is. You know, last week we played Weird Al Yankovic in his parody video and song, What About the Penny? Or It's All About the Pentiums. All About the Pentiums. All right. This week we have Weird Al back, and he has a song called Bob. Now, it is a homage to Bob Dylan, and it's done in his vocal style and in his style. But here's what's weird about the song, okay? This song is done entirely in palindromes. Now, you say, what is a palindrome? A palindrome is where a word is spelled the same, or phrase, is spelled the same forward and backward. So, for instance, mom, M-O-M, spell it backwards, M-O-M. Got it? That's a palindrome. Bob, as in Bob Dylan, is a palindrome. B-O-B, spelled backwards, B-O-B. If you take every phrase of the song, it's spelled the same forward as backwards. And you think, how in the world can you make a song and do that? Well, leave it up to Weird Al, and he managed to do it. So here we go with Bob.
I'm an Amregal, a German am I. Never auto even if I had a high five. Madam, I'm Adam, too hot to hoot. Basil, war song was wrong. Was it a car or a cat I saw? Rise to vote, sir. Do geese see God? You nine man interpret, nine man I nod. Rats live on no evil star. Won't lovers revolt now? Race fast, safe car. The Saffron is as selfish as I am. May a moody baby do my yam. Ah, Satan sees Natasha, no devil lived on. Lonely Tylenol, not a banana baton. No ex and Nixon, of stone be not so. No minor ego. Naomi Amon. A Toyota's a Toyota. A dog of panic in a pagoda. Oh no, Don Ho. Nurse asked by gypsies. Run. Senile felines. Now I see bees I won. UFO tofu. We panic in a pew. Rat in a sanitary zoo. Got a red nugget, a fat egg under a dog. Go hang a salami, I'm a lasagna hog.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. That's why he's Weird Al, and you're not. That's very cool, though. I mean, every lyric in the song is a palindrome. Uzi rat in a sanitary zoo. Take that, write it backwards, and it's Uzi rat in a sanitary zoo. Very strange, but cool. And that's why I wanted to share it with you, because it's weird geek culture. And you know that I love such things. All right, well, it's just about time to slide on out of here, so I guess that's what we'll do. I tell you what, join me next week, spread the word, and write me at drbill@thecomputercurmudgeon.com. Until then, remember, the doctor is out of here.